Welcome to the Soul Science Nutrition Podcast, where you'll discover that when it comes to your health, you're so much more powerful than you've been led to believe. And now, your host. She's a holistic nutrition and lifestyle coach, chef, author, and yogi, Christine Okazy.
Hello, and welcome to the Soul Science Nutrition Podcast. I'm Christine Okazy. Thanks so much for listening. One of my favorite quotes is by internationally known mind-body medicine authority, Jon Kabat-Zinn. And he says, "No one can listen to your body for you. To grow and heal, you have to take responsibility for listening to it yourself." Well, that's the clarion call on this podcast and in the coaching work that I do. Because I know that our bodies are magnificent, filled with so much intelligence, and they're constantly communicating with us. Now, learning to tune in and deeply listen is really the key to stepping into our full potential when it comes to creating the health and well-being that we desire. Well, today's special guest shares her compelling personal journey of learning this life-changing lesson and truth. She's Lynn Del Mastro Thompson. She's a holistic practitioner with training in somatic psychology, body talk, energy medicine, therapeutic yoga, and hypnotherapy. She is a best-selling Amazon author of You Are Not Your Diagnosis, a book that offers people suffering with chronic health conditions hope, understanding, and strategies to step into a whole new level of empowerment in their own healing journey. I can't wait for you to listen to this uplifting conversation filled with so much inspiration and wisdom. And if you do like the podcast, I'd be grateful if you could leave a rating and review on Apple Podcast. And if you haven't already hit that subscribe button, please do so. It helps me keep the podcast growing. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the episode. Hi, Lynn. Welcome to the podcast. So great to have you here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Awesome. So I would love if we could just dive in and if you could take us back to that time in your life when that healthy 25-year-old back in 2004, when her life was turned upside down.
Yes, for sure. So when I was 25, I was in grad school. I was pursuing a PhD in history. And as you said, you know, I saw myself as a pretty healthy young woman. Mm-hmm. And that year, that summer, I had scheduled elective surgery. And so again, it was elective. So we're not talking about something where, you know, you're sick. I was going to have a breast reduction. And I get the phone call the night before the surgery that nobody wants to get. And the phone call kind of went to the effect of, "Hey, I got your pre-op blood work," said the surgeon, "and something doesn't look quite right." And he said, "You know, before you panic completely, I want you to just drive back over to the hospital and have them run the lab again, because, you know, sometimes things happen, mistakes can be made. So we want to make sure that this is really true before we cancel your surgery." So rush over to the hospital, get a phone call, maybe, you know, an hour later after that, after they run the labs. And he said, "Yeah, I'm really sorry. It's not a lab error. I can't do surgery. Something," and basically all he left me with was, "Something looks really off with your blood work. Go see your primary doctor." Right. You know, probably thinking it's not his place, you know, or his expertise to tell me anything, but sure. It kind of leaves you, you know, at a late night phone call going, "I don't know, what does this mean? Like, what does he mean by off?"
Yes. Yes.
So down the rabbit hole I go, and I think I got to see my primary doctor the next day, who of course ran more tests, more blood work. And I think a day or two later, I get the phone call from a doctor who I've never even met, which is highly odd, right? Wow. Whoever gets a phone call from a doctor you don't know, that was a first for me. Wow. And he said, "Hey, Lynn, how are you doing?" And I'm like, other than panic that like some strange doctor is randomly calling me, you know, and I don't think this is good news. I'm okay. And he said, "Okay, well, if you don't have any symptoms, come see me and meet me at the hospital tomorrow. And if you have symptoms, come to the hospital immediately."
Oh my goodness. Seriously.
And I was so, you know, looking back on it now, I was so shell-shocked. I never even asked like, "Hey, what kind of symptoms are we talking about here?" I was just like,
Yes.
Okay.
You know, absolutely.
So I, you know, I hung up and I spent a night of just like kind of being in panic of like, what should I even be worried about here?
Oh my goodness.
No symptoms come on. So it's the next morning, we go to the hospital, I meet that doctor, and then he sends in another doctor, and it starts, you know, the process of trying to figure out what's going on. You know, he said, well, we think from all of these labs that we've seen that you've clotted off the veins that drain your liver. And I go, that's not good. And he said, of course, that shouldn't happen. So we need to figure out, you know, how to get them open and why did this happen? Mm. And so he sent in a hematologist to try and figure out that aspect of like, why did I clot? And more tests, doing an ultrasound, you know, all these things to try and, you know, visualize the problem. Mm-hmm. And then we got to the point a couple of days in at the hospital I was at. It was a smaller town in California in Santa Barbara. And so they said, you know, we know what the problem is, at least with the liver, but we've never done this procedure that they have to open up the veins. So we're going to send you somewhere else where they've done this before. Mm-hmm. And I said, good. I don't want to be the first, you know.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm.
They transferred me up to a hospital in San Francisco and had a procedure to reopen the veins of my liver, and then more process of trying to figure out the blood issue because they hadn't really made the determination yet.
Yes.
So about, I think this is maybe about, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks into the process, we finally get the meeting with the head of my team. And he said, you know, we think we have the diagnosis for you. And he declared that he thought it was chronic myelogenous leukemia at that time.
Okay.
And as you can imagine, hearing the word leukemia at 25, you're
That's
like,
right.
Terrified, you know, yes. what does this mean? Immediately my brain raced to a whole bunch of things. Like, do I need chemo? Am I going to need a bone marrow transplant? Like all of the things that you've heard about leukemia, you think, you know, does that apply to me?
Yes.
And he said, no, you don't need chemo. No, you don't need a bone marrow transplant. You're going to go on this medication that's only been around for a few years. It's called Gleevec. And it's supposed to target basically whatever the genetic mutation that causes CML.
Okay.
So, you know, reeling from that news, you know, and he said, okay, well, probably tomorrow we'll release you from the hospital. I was like, well, that's a good thing. You know, I can get to go home. But
right.
My whole life was like, you know, turned upside down and shaken a bunch of times.
Okay. So then you proceeded to have, I guess, sort of monthly treatments or monthly follow-up appointments while you were on this medication?
Yes. So
what was that like?
Yes. I know you've read my story. So
yes.
I went back to, you know, the doctor who originally had been part of my case and part of the short story I didn't kind of say as I was introducing it, he did the initial bone marrow biopsy, or he tried to. So I had to go back to this doctor who had basically tortured me and told me that, oh, all you'll feel, Lynn, is just a little bit of pressure while we do this procedure. And I did not feel just a little bit of pressure. Needless to say, it was excruciating. Wow. And quite, you know, I couldn't tolerate it. He had to stop. So I'm sent back to this guy and he's my doctor and we go to these appointments. I spent more time in the waiting room than I spent with him, which I know is not uncommon.
Crazy.
He would spend about 5 minutes with me. He'd look at whatever labs he had had drawn. And he would say over probably after a few months, you know, oh, it looks like things are getting better. Like, it looks like this drug is working. And I started to actually like physically decline more. So it was this very strange experience of like, but you say I'm getting better, but actually like I, you know, started to turn into a human skeleton, not because I wanted to, or was, you know, trying some fad diet because my body couldn't maintain any weight.
Yeah. Crazy.
And so when I would say to him, you know, Hey, you know, you say these labs look great, but I don't feel well. Or when I would answer like, how are you doing? And I'd say to him, I don't feel well. He would go, well, you look great. And I was like, you're lying to me. You know, like when strangers on the street tell you, you don't look good, you know, you're in a bad way. Like, don't just lie to someone. And he would just write me off. And it was 3 years of really dealing with him in that way. of not being heard, not being listened to, trying to get actually a different specialist to see me because I was like, this guy is like not listening. I know this isn't right. Couldn't get a referral because, of course, as we know, especially in the US, you got to get a referral for a specialist in most cases.
Sure.
My primary doctor had a high opinion of him because they went to medical school together and was like,
boy,
he's the best in town. And I'm like, if this guy's the best in town, we're really screwed.
Right. So frustrating, so hopeless, so negating. You know, of what was what you knew was going on with yourself, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you look in the mirror and you don't even really recognize yourself anymore because you're just like skin and bones, you're like, don't tell me I look healthy and I look good. Like, listen to me and go, this is strange. You know, your labs look good, but your physical experience and, you know, your body doesn't look good. Like, that, those two things do not add up.
Right. Treating a lab report versus treating the whole person. Slightly different approach.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not a piece of paper that's in front of you that's like, oh, this looks really good.
Right.
Yes, he was more interested in the piece of paper than he was in the patient in front of him.
So frustrating. Okay. Now, what was the catalyst for you when you, you know, kind of hit a real dark spot here? I mean, 3 years of just invalidation, 3 years of, you know, physical, mental, emotional, you know, suffering. What was the catalyst for you to finally sort of dive into your own healing process?
Yeah. So I actually had a huge other tragedy that happened about a year and a half later into this whole journey with my health. And my best friend actually passed away very suddenly. She actually, ironically or not so ironically, died of a blood clot after having her tonsils removed. So it hit so close to home. We were the same age, like born 18 days apart. And, you know, that was kind of the, like, I knew, I think going through the treatment, like, yes, I can die. Like, I kind of got that on one level. But then when you lose somebody who's your peer of a blood clot, you kind of go, wow, like, this is really real. This is scary.
Frightening. You called it the cosmic 2x4, right?
Yes. In the book I referred, you know, I kind of view them as two different ones. The first one getting sick, like wake up. And then the second one was almost like a second, like, okay, but you're still doing all the things that made you miserable, you know?
And
now, you know, her death was kind of like, well, are you going to keep living your life in this way that just, you know, denies what makes you happy or, you know, doing something that's just pushing yourself down a path you don't want.
Okay. Say more about that.
Yeah. So I was in grad school. I was completely miserable. Like, I was miserable probably from day one. And I spent kind of the first 3 years before I got sick lying to myself about, you know, how it was supposed to be. And I was like, well, you know, you're in grad school. It's supposed to be hard. You're supposed to be unhappy. You know, like all of these stupid, dumb beliefs that, you know, I don't know where they came from, probably, you know, from some cultural conceptions about getting a PhD, right?
Yes.
And, you know, so every time my body tried to kind of give me some messages in that time period of, you know, hey, you're starting to get depression. Hey, you're dealing with anxiety. I'd be like, but it's supposed to be that way. Like, grad students aren't supposed to be happy. They're not supposed to be relaxed and calm. Like, panic attacks, that must be normal.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So are you drawing a conclusion, you know, that were you able to sort of connect the dots for yourself in retrospectively, you know,
I definitely think so. Yeah. I think, you know, in that denying of my own truth for, you know, 3 years and just kind of saying, oh, I'm just going to keep doing something I hate because I don't know what I want. And the not knowing was scarier to me at that time than the known horrible. So by denying that truth over and over again, my body just kind of kept getting louder and louder. And then finally, you know, it screamed, or I got the 2x4 up the side of the head, like, okay, well, there's no other way to get your attention than that you are choosing a life that is not for you. And do you want to die miserable or do you want to make a new decision?
Wow. That is profound. What a profound, you know, awakening, insight, you know, reflection there. Okay. And you go into your book, you found some really powerful healing modalities, you know, some that, you know, resonated with you going as far back to when you were much younger, but then you sort of really added on in your path. You know, share a little bit about that. So biofeedback, somatic psychology, et cetera.
Yeah. So kind of the beginning of the journey was just going back to something I had tried when I was a teenager, which was biofeedback. When I used it as a teenager, it was for migraine headaches. And then when I started using it in this time period, it was more because I was so anxious. Like I just, you know, every day was, you know, my nervous system was overloaded. And I thought, well, you know, it helped me back then. Like maybe it could help me now.
Beautiful.
And yeah, it was empowering because I started to realize even just through, you know, my breath, I could learn how to start to regulate my system instead of just being at the mercy of, you know, everything happening that I had no control over. Mm-hmm. I could start to control my body in a way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then that just kind of started opening the door. You know, I had a moment in that session with that practitioner and I was like, when I get better, I think I know what I want to do, maybe, you know, like maybe I want to be like her and help people.
Yes.
And so then I kind of was like, okay, I'm going to leap out of this grad school program that I'm in, that I hate, that I was stuck in for health insurance at a certain point because, you know, before we had kind of the system we have now where you can at least make some transitions, I was really stuck. So I got a job and I said, okay, I want to work with people, but I have a history degree. Like, what does that qualify me for? You know? So I jumped into a master's program and started studying something called somatic psychology, which is a mind-body approach to psychology, if you've never heard the term somatic before. And so started pursuing that, knowing that I didn't want to become like a talk therapist. I was pretty clear that that wasn't my path, that I really first wanted to start doing biofeedback.
Yes.
And then in that window, kind of after my friend's death, when I went to that dark place of depression, I started therapy at that time. And the therapist had sent me to this class that was called Yoga for Healing. Mm-hmm. And I still remember when she first brought it up thinking like, this lady's crazy. She wants me to go to a yoga class. Like, I'm exhausted. Like,
that's right. You
know, because I've only seen yoga before, like in a gym, you know, with people doing strenuous activity. And I was
right.
She's nuts. Like, what? So you want me to go stand on my head?
Yes. Okay. And it was not quite that.
It was very much, you know, being on the floor or using props and very gentle, you know, just gentle movement supported practices and postures, a lot of kind of visualization and meditation and breath work.
Yep.
That was, you know, not what I expected, but it was exactly what I needed, really.
Beautiful. Yes, absolutely. Okay. So you go into your book and you talk about these healing modalities, how they helped you in your journey, you know, to heal, and then obviously lit up a path for you to be of service to folks, you know, who are going through very similar experiences with chronic illness and challenge.
Yes.
You talk about something called trauma diagnosis in your book. And, you know, I would love for you to just share a little bit about that. It's a great term. It's a great, you know, area of discussion that you've shed some light on through your own experience.
Yeah. So I really view, you know, whenever we get any big news like that, a cancer diagnosis, an autoimmune diagnosis, whatever it is, it's trauma. You know, your life went from being one thing that you pictured, you know, you're going down a path and you're like pursuing it, even if like for me, I was not really happy in that path. And all of a sudden it's like, oh no, you know, you're not you anymore. You are, you know, as my book is titled, you are the diagnosis. Like people start seeing you a different way. You know, I felt like I became like Lynn, the girl with leukemia, or Lynn, the cancer patient, instead of, you know, people just seeing me for who I was in the way I was before.
Yes. And it impacts how we relate to ourselves. And why is that so important in your journey? Like, what did you notice that, you know, how you were relating to yourself around this diagnosis?
Yeah. I mean, it felt like parts of me were just kind of lost or buried, you know, because every conversation, like I still remember, you know, my friends from grad school, the conversations were so different from, you know, we used to have shared interests or would be talking about something in the program. And then all of a sudden it was like, how are you doing? You know, how are you feeling? How's your treatment going? Like everybody just kind of pivots to focusing on that, thinking, you know, that they're being supportive, which I believe they're trying to be.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, for many people, especially, you know, if you're introverted or a private person, it's like having everybody know, you know, what's happening in your health history is kind of intense. And maybe you want to talk about something else. You know, you don't want to be like, oh yeah, I went to the doctor yesterday and he was a real jerk and he didn't listen to me. You know, you want to just be like talking about something that you are happy about or something positive.
Right. Right. And that really gets in the way, you know, I find, you know, with, and it can be something as serious as a cancer diagnosis or an autoimmune diagnosis, or it can be something, you know, a little bit more, you know, wider on the spectrum of depression or anxiety. You know, instead of, you know, having anxiety, you become anxious. You know, instead of having symptoms of depression, I am depressed, right? And I think you do a good job in the work that you do, you know, in inviting people to maybe even just become a little bit more aware of the power of their words, power of their self-identification when it comes to these things, these unwanted health issues, right?
Yes. Yeah. Because it's so, and it's so easy to fall into that trap. It's something that we can just become, you know, the cancer patient or the depressed person, and how we use our words about that. You know, there's not even, as I talk about in the book, there's not even really good alternatives to not identifying with it without, you know, having like a sentence that reads like a paragraph. You know, I have been diagnosed with X, but, you know, I'm choosing to heal my body. Like, how do you say, you know, like the truth that, yes, you currently are, you know, addressing a health issue, but that's not like I am, you know, or I have even.
That's right.
Have feels like it has that ownership of like, or it owns you either way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's really, it's, I think that's a very important and fundamental step, you know, when it comes to understanding what's going on in our bodies, you know, and the story that we ultimately get to tell about it is really important. It can make or break, I think, the optimal healing and facilitate that healing process, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, we need to learn to take back our own power. A quote that stood out with me a couple years ago, maybe it's even like 4 years ago, that I heard of, like, how, you know, a diagnosis is kind of the modern version of a voodoo curse, right?
Love that. Yes.
Like you hear someone say it in a white coat with authority, and that, you know, it's like, okay, now this is like, this is your reality. It just kind of collapses everything into that, you know, that one possibility of, you know, you have cancer. Okay. I'm the cancer patient now.
And, that's right.
You know, I can't heal because I'm still in that identity.
And you mentioned a key word there, possibility, right? And it's that sense of possibility that can get shut down quite effectively, you know, depending on who you're interacting with, you know, at that time, you know, of intervention. You talk about, you know, the power of a healthcare practitioner or provider's projections and their beliefs. They become very, you know, much a hindrance to that sense of possibility. And that's absolutely key, isn't it? In terms of
totally
feeling empowered, feeling sovereign, right?
Right. If they're kind of going off of, oh, well, I've only seen people with this diagnosis have, you know, this trajectory, and they're kind of like, well, here you go. You're going down this path. That's not really a nice path. You know, it's not, it's kind of, again, creating that reality, and what they tell you about what's possible too can really narrow your focus, instead of saying, okay, well, I've been given this diagnosis, but, you know, are there people that have healed from this? Are there people that have recovered? What have they done? You know, have they just taken a pill and lived with it? Or did they start to go outside of the bounds of that system and say, what else can I do?
Important question to begin with. So you found a system of healing known as body talk. You've done, you know, it was kind of the evolutionary process. And you've even, I think even in 2021, you're now, you integrated another modality, if I'm not mistaken, hypnotherapy, but I'd love for you to talk to you again. I know it's been an evolution similar to my journey. You know, they're not discrete systems of healing. They really build on each other. And I want to just kind of honor that process for you. Tell us about body talk.
Yeah. So body talk is an energy medicine system that's really interested in the story behind the symptoms. So, you know, you go to the doctor and they're really just focused on the symptoms and they want to give you a diagnosis and the label. And we're more interested in like, well, why? Like, why do you have these symptoms? What is the body trying to communicate to you? So if you think of, you know, the image of an iceberg, the part of the iceberg above is kind of like the symptoms and it's the small part, right? And the part that's below is huge, you know, and it's diverse too, right? You could take something as simple as someone getting a headache and you could say, well, why does this person have a headache? Well, there's a whole bunch of possibilities, right? Maybe they're eating something that they have a sensitivity to and, you know, they don't know that. Maybe they're dehydrated. Maybe they're stressed out. Maybe they're dealing with trauma. Like you could just, you know, that's probably four or five things. You could probably list at least 20 possibilities of like, why does that person have a headache? And maybe it's not just one thing. Maybe it's two or three that add up. So, you know, when we start to get curious about that and we get curious about like, you know, what is the body trying to communicate through this? What's the story behind it? That's where the shift can start to happen because, you know, I view symptoms really as our body just trying to communicate with us.
So what does a session look like? You're a body talk practitioner. What's a typical session? Someone who comes in and says, let's just start with that. I have chronic migraines.
Yeah. So, you know, typical process is, of course, to do a little bit of a consultation, kind of finding out a little bit about what they know about the, you know, their headaches, like when did they come on? Do they know anything about, you know, oh, if I eat this thing, it tends to trigger it. And if they don't, that's totally fine. You know, we're just kind of starting from a little bit of a basis of information, kind of an intake. And then we go into the actual session and the session. Now I work fully just remotely with people. I used to do both in person and distance.
Yes.
So, you know, the distance work is the person's in their own space, usually in their own bed or on the couch, just relaxing. And I get quiet and I'm kind of tuning in intuitively to the story. So it's a, we call it structured intuition. So there's like a protocol chart, which is, I also like to call it a roadmap because it's a nice analogy. And we're kind of navigating that intuitively of like, you know, what area am I first drawn to when I'm looking at the story of migraine headaches? Oh, you know, here comes a food intolerance. Okay. And maybe it's something they don't even know because a lot of times we have sensitivities and intolerances and, you know, we don't always know that they're there. We just keep eating the thing and wondering why we don't feel well. So, you know, we'll get to whatever the story is, or maybe we'll go to, you know, a traumatic event that happened to them at a certain age. And in that process, in the session, there's different tools kind of built in to rebalance the body. So rebalancing like the immune system so that, you know, say you're allergic to dairy, like your body shouldn't really have a strong reaction to dairy. There's reasons, I think, scientifically, you know, that we might not want to be big dairy eaters, but your immune system shouldn't have kind of this innate freak out when it's introduced to certain foods. So we can kind of rebalance the immune system. If it was a trauma, there's ways to actually very quickly release the emotional charge. So it's not like kind of a memory eraser, like you'll still remember what happened to you at, you know, when you were five or whenever, but you can think about it without feeling that emotional charge that you felt in the moment and getting really activated. It's like, oh, now I just kind of remember that thing happened to me when I was five. And you might say, I remember I was sad or I was anxious, but you don't feel that sadness and that anxiety in the moment when you recall it.
Excellent. Okay, great. Yeah. It's a lot of rewiring and reprogramming, you know, techniques that go into that from what I gather.
Just kind of helping the body basically to heal itself. So we use a little bit of just gentle tapping. It's a little different than EFT tapping. Most people kind of have that initial question of like tapping, oh, is it EFT? It's a little bit different. And, you know, sometimes there's visualization or, you know, breathing or eye movement work for some of the trauma to help shift things.
Nice. Interesting. It seems to pull from a lot of, you know, ancient wisdom and healing, you know, traditions, yes. Chinese medicine, yes. Ayurveda, and some Eastern healing going on there. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The founder of Body Talk is a doctor of Chinese medicine as well as an acupuncturist. So he kind of has this like bringing in, you know, East and West. And then I think he went on to study a lot of yogic traditions and, you know, bringing the beauty of the system in my mind is how it brings all these different healing systems together in a way that's accessible instead of just saying, oh, well, you need to go see, you know, an acupuncturist for that and a this for that. And, you know, go to yoga for that to work on your chakras. Mm-hmm. It's like, they're all related. And you know, sometimes someone needs more from one system than another. So that's it allows great. The body to kind of drive the bus, if you will, of like, what does it want? What lens does it want to see this issue through?
Oh, well said. Well said. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, that's wonderful. So listening to our bodies, you know, and learning to tune into, you know, this thing called body wisdom, you know, which I love, you know, to do as well. How do you help people in your practice, befriend their bodies when, as you probably know from experience, many folks have really felt betrayed by their bodies, almost like their bodies are not their ally in their health?
Yeah.
What are some, I guess, strategies you help people who say, what do you mean? I've been at war with my body forever. My body's betraying me. You
know? Right. Yeah. I mean, one of the first strategies is just like to have some education around, like, you know, your symptoms really are just communication from your body. You know, I always joke, it's like, would be more convenient if we got a phone call or a text message from our body, you know, like immediately knowing, but unfortunately our body doesn't know how to do that.
That's great. That's great.
So, you know, the more we understand that it's not, you know, our bodies don't want us to feel miserable. They don't want us to be in pain or suffer, but sometimes it's like, that's the only way that they can be like, hey, there's a problem here, you know, and you don't seem to be paying attention. So I'm going to give you this pain or this symptom that kind of makes you go, what's going on? Like, why do I always have a stomach ache or why do I always have a headache?
Yes. Okay. And how do you help people to start to tune into that listening?
Yeah. So I like to just kind of teach sometimes a process that's very simple where, you know, if you have a symptom, kind of like in meditation, you get a little bit quiet, get yourself centered. So, you know, go to a quiet place, do some nice breathing, try to let your mind just get more present to, you know, your body and the internal rather than, oh, I've got to go pick up the kids at 4 o'clock. And, you know,
yeah,
or you're focused on your to-do list, which is easy to do.
Yes.
And then starting to just ask some gentle questions of whatever the symptom or whatever area you're curious about. So asking things like, you know, what is it that you want me to know? Say, you know, if you have the headache, like, what does my head want me to know? Or my brain, you know, whatever you feel like is kind of the center of the problem. Mm-hmm. What does it need from me?
Wow.
And doing that, you know, I was sharing with somebody yesterday, it's not going to always be like a fast, like the first time you do it, if you've never done it before and you've been saying, you know, my body's betrayed me, blah, 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 for months or years, you might not get anything profound the first time you do it. You might, you know, but the more you do it kind of like a practice, like a meditation, the more then your body will start to open up and be like, oh, I guess she's doing this every day. Maybe she does want to get to hear what I have to say.
Wonderful. So it is a practice, right? Yes. There's some consistency because it's a skill that you know, we need to hone or reactivate. Right.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I think probably, you know, if you think about children in some ways, they are much more in tune,
absolutely,
you know, with their bodies and they're like, oh, you know, I'm thirsty. I better go get some water. And we're like, why do I have a headache? Maybe I need a glass of water, you know?
That's awesome. Yes. No, great analogy for sure. In these days, you know, as we get older and older and busier in this modern living, we live above the neck, as I like to say. I mean,
yes,
really, it's this disconnection that's a real problem because it gets us off track. And as you said, you know, there's a lot of information being provided all the time. So
yes,
it can be very useful.
Yes.
Maybe there's a, so we talked a little bit about some conditions, but I'd love, maybe there's a success story, a client's success story that maybe resonates or really touched your heart, you know, around the work that you do that you'd love to share.
Yeah, for sure. So one client, and she and I are kind of still in contact. We kind of became friendly over time of working together.
Nice.
She came to me and she had an autoimmune disease I'd never heard of, one that actually attacked the brain.
Wow.
And when I found out how many medications she was on, it was probably about 2.5 pages typed up on a computer. So wow. A lot of medications. And she also had like a seizure disorder as well. So she was taking some things, you know, for that. And when we finished, I think she was only on her seizure medication and maybe one other medication, you know, and she worked with a doctor. I always like to say, you know, I'm not taking people off of medications. We're supporting the body in healing. And then, you know, they can work with a doctor to say, okay, like, I don't feel like I really need this anymore. Can we maybe try going off of it? Because that's not my scope of practice to
absolutely
to just take people off of medications.
That's right.
But it's amazing to see, you know, and she still, when we've been in touch, it's probably been at least 2 years now. She says, I'm still in remission from this autoimmune disease. You know, I feel like you were the one that helped me get to that remission state and, you know, maintain it. And she still uses all of, because I like to teach people a lot of tools as well, you know, for home care, and because it's about empowerment too, right? I don't want people to always be dependent on me or other practitioners. It's like, what can you do for you?
It's all about that. Yes. You know, that toolkit, right?
Yes.
Just, you know, more options, you know, on the menu to work with what the body's telling them. I love that.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Great.
So she uses her tools still, and it's just amazing to see.
Yeah. And what a different approach, right? The idea is, you know, when we know how the body works, to your point, we begin with education. That's always a really useful entry point to understanding exactly, you know, what is the design of the mind and the body and the emotions and how does that work, right?
Yes.
And then we are able to, you know, equip folks with different resources, different techniques, strategies. Well, that's just a game changer, isn't it? You know,
for
going forward, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I actually had another client who, it was very interesting because she ended up in the same hospital I had been in. And it was like, what are the odds? You know, she was a young woman and, you know, a little younger than I was when she got sick. And she's gone on now to step into doing healing work and learning to do EFT and just like seeing that. But, you know, just knowing that she was empowered through her healing rather like I felt like I became, instead of just, you know, dependent on someone to, you know, I had one person that I was like, oh, you're not the right client for me. Cause she said, I just want to lay on your table. That was when I was still seeing people in person.
Fix me.
I just want you to fix me because I want it to just feel good. And I'm like, that's not what's really happening here. I'm not fixing anyone. I'm helping your body to heal and helping you to be empowered to heal.
Thank you. Absolutely. And you bring up a really beautiful, realization around, you know, body talk and body wisdom, right? Is that all our symptoms, all our health challenges, unwanted, you know, health conditions, at the end of the day, they are opportunities to heal and to heal deeper and to go deeper and to evolve deeper.
Yes.
I mean, in our journey.
Yes, for sure. I mean, I am definitely not the same person I was at 25. And if that hadn't have happened, I don't know, you know, you never know where you would be.
Yeah.
But it definitely catalyzed something in an evolution. And, you know, when things happen, when other things arise or something comes back up that you think, oh, you know, I thought I addressed that and it was gone. Oh, here it is again. It's 5 years later. It's like, maybe it's an opportunity to heal at a deeper level. Like I had a colleague who talked about healing being kind of like a spiral. And so sometimes you're at the same place, but you're deeper within the spiral, you know, so it's not like, oh, I failed and I'm back to square one. It's like you're deeper in that layer of the healing.
Thank you. I love that analogy. That's really brilliant. And I think that's such another kind of really important point, because some of us can get into that blame thing, especially in the wellness space. I'm using wellness in air quotes, because, you know, we talk about, well, I'm doing everything I can. I want optimal health. And then I get sick. I get this diagnosis. Oh, I must have failed. Right. There's some, you know, oh, wow, I really didn't meet the mark. Oh, I should have done more. And we tell a story that doesn't exactly, you know, facilitate anything in that regard, right?
Anything positive, or sometimes even in the work of, you know, law of attraction, it's like, oh, well, then you manifested that into that's your
right.
life.
And, right. You were so negative.
It's right. like, I do believe, you know, to some degree in law of attraction, but I can see how some people use it in a way that can be very disempowering and blaming to people right. of, you know, you created this for yourself instead of, you know, maybe it was just something that was going to happen and maybe it's for their own journey and their evolution rather than
thank you.
You failed.
That's right. That's right. So Lynn, what does your self-care look like these days? I like to ask folks, you know, who've been on incredible journeys like your own, what are your non-negotiables?
My non-negotiables, definitely yeah. exercise to start the day.
Okay.
Most days, you know, like at least I aim for 6 days a week to have some movement in my body. Mm-hmm. And also usually some sort of meditation or doing some sort of hypnosis work to really do a little bit of, you know, internal quiet time for my mind to really connect also to more of the, you know, the spirit and the higher consciousness aspects. Those are kind of my two must-haves to start my day.
Yes, yes. Beautiful. And I'd just love for you to share, why are they non-negotiable?
I notice such a difference if I do them and I don't do them, especially like the exercise has always been sort of the easier one for me to stay consistent with. And the mm-hmm. meditation one is, it's interesting how it kind of comes and goes. And
sure.
For a while I had a story about, oh, I was so consistent before I met my husband and he moved in. And then I didn't have my own space anymore, which is a ridiculous story. Like why do you need to live alone to meditate?
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. That's awesome. Okay. And, you know, I have to ask you, you've shared quite a bit about, you know, the limitations of our modern, you know, Western system, you know, but at the end of the day, if you could change one thing about our current healthcare system, what would that be? Like in your world, in Lynn's world, what does healthcare look like?
In my world, it's about empowering people to understand we have a lot more control than that system leads us to believe. I'm super big and geeking out on things like epigenetics and how we can actually control when genes are turning on and off by the choices we make. You know, it's not necessarily you're sitting in some crazy meditation and you're manipulating your genes, but, you know, choosing what you eat, choosing if you move your body or you don't. Choosing products that don't have as much toxin, you know, burden that is being put on your body. All of those things can empower you to take charge of your health. Whereas, you know, the Western system just wants to say, oh, it's your, you know, it's your genes. You can't do anything.
It's part of aging.
Yeah, exactly. Or, oh, too bad. Cancer runs in your family. Hope you don't get it.
That's right. That's right. Awesome. I love it. Okay. And if I could ask you, what's then, maybe this is a similar question, you know, what keeps you inspired in these very challenging times?
I think knowing that, you know, as some of our systems are being challenged, there's also the possibility for evolution right now.
Yes.
You know, more people waking up to, oh, hey, this isn't the only way. Like maybe there's other people out there that can help me, or maybe I don't want to just be told, you know, this is how you take care of your health in a one size fits all way, you know, what can I do to empower myself and, you know, use the time, like, you know, if you're stuck at home, well, you can still find ways to exercise. You can still meditate. You can still do things to reduce your stress.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. Yeah. There's definitely a grand invitation. And I think people are at an accelerated pace, you know, unprecedented accelerated pace, waking up, you know, to wanting more, knowing there's more. And we certainly have leveled the playing field information-wise, you know, in terms of having access to all this wonderful knowledge and wisdom, right?
Yes.
So
yep.
With folks that, like yourself, is there anything else, Lynn, maybe that I didn't know enough to ask that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I don't think so. I think you did a great job of asking the questions. Having read the book, I'm sure helped kind of give a deeper insight into where you wanted to guide things.
That's awesome. Great. Well, we'll make sure to put all that information. And is there anything special maybe you want to call attention on your website to that, you know, folks can get an idea to opportunity to work with you, to learn more about your services?
Yeah, definitely. So I offer both a free consultation if you just have some questions and you want to chat. Right now, I also offer an introductory session at a special price point. So I typically don't do just one-off sessions, but because most people have no idea what Body Talk is and how I work, sometimes it's nice to be able to dip your toe in and not go, oh, I have to commit to, you know, months of working together without any clue of what I'm going to experience.
Yes. With you. Excellent. Well, I'll make sure to include all those links in the show notes. And thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being the light and the healing force you are in the world. It's been wonderful to have you on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, take care.